All right, folks. Another week is coming and gone. It's the look back. Looking back on week three. And like I said, unfortunately, as much as I hate to admit this, I was right about the Eagles. There was no way in hell they were going to go down to Dallas and win like that. It was a very terrible game with a very poor offensive game plan. Like I said, you can't really sit back and think of what Dak did. Zeke turned back the clock. He always plays well against us, and he had another great game. And obviously, Trayvon Diggs is going to be a pain in our ass for the next several years, since he, for the third time, he's played the Eagles, and the third time he got a pick, and this time it went to the house. Like I said, it was a very poor executed game. And it's got very much this Eagles fans in overreaction mode already about Jalen Hurts' throwing ability and already the coaching of Nick Sirianni, who's already, people are already asking for his job, and it's only been three games. Come on, people. But that's just how Philadelphia fans are. They're very impatient. They want to win, and they want to win every year. And that's pretty much like most cities. But unfortunately, this is a process. It's not going to be a quick fix, and like I said, they kind of learned that on Monday night. So, your thoughts on this game and what you think about it? Are you concerned? Or are you worried? Or it's just what it is?
Yeah, man, it was a bad game, man. There's not much positive you can say about anything that happened in the game. You know, pretty much every aspect of the game, the Eagles got their asses beat, and they looked terrible. You know, coaching was bad. Jalen Hurts was bad. The receivers were bad. Devontae Smith didn't do a damn thing. Offensive line, the whole defense, the whole deal, man. Javon Hargrave looked good. Other than that, every player had a bad performance, I would say. So, yeah, it was an awful performance from this team. I expected more out of them, but it is what it is. It's Eagles fans, I mean, it's pretty ridiculous how they react sometimes, but, you know, it was a bad game all around. I mean, there's not a whole lot to say, man. It was just awful, and these next couple weeks are going to be key for Jalen Hurts' career, especially with the Eagles, because we got pretty much three tough games coming up here, two of which are really tough games. The next one is obviously the Chiefs. No one expects him to win, but Hurts needs to have a good game and, you know, at least hold his own, because that's now basically the last six quarters he's been horrible. And He's fighting for, basically, he's trying to become the Eagles franchise quarterback of the future. And so far, since the Atlanta game, he really hasn't been very good. So, you know, he needs to respond here and come up big. Even if they lose, he needs to have a good game. So, we'll see. But this game was awful.
Yeah. Like I said, it was hard to give up bowling, and this is probably the only time between now and May I'm going to give up anything or pre-bowl, whatever. But like I said, watching this game, I kind of knew what I was about to see. You know, what it wasn't going to be a pretty game. There's a lot of momentum with Dak coming. You know, first home game of the year, first home game since he got hurt, and obviously they had a great setup, but we just didn't execute. And it wasn't like we were that terrible, but we were. And like I said, there's a lot of blame to go around. There is a lot. You know, Jalen Hurts is he's a good man, and he obviously admitted to his struggles, you know, and that's the type of leadership that we need. And he obviously took full responsibility. But it's not all his fault. It's Sirianni's game plan that was terrible. He didn't run the ball. He only ran the ball three times in the entire game. Now, how in the hell does that make any sense? Like, you know, Sirianni, obviously, he comes off as, you know, he wants to be a guy that wants to balance offense and talk a lot of game. But to me, you have to execute. Like they always say, you have a plan until you get punched in the mouth. And in this case, they didn't get punched in the mouth. They got beat up in an alleyway before they even knew how to punch. And the fact is, I remember 2 years ago when Dougie P was still here, obviously, there was a game against Dallas before he said, and he said strictly to the media, and you remember this, we're going to beat Dallas. We're going to beat Dallas. What happened? It got destroyed. They got destroyed in that game. And this past week, they took it to an even more egotistical level. They didn't say they were just going to beat Dallas. They had sweaters saying beat Dallas. They had sweaters. The last thing teams should ever do in this league is give your opponents confidence. Because I'll give the Cowboys credit. You and I can't stand it. I think I can't stand them even more, but you obviously can't stand Cowboy or the fans or anything. But at least they're smart enough to know that, okay, we have an opponent. They're one of our division rivals. But we're not going to say anything. We're not going to give them any kind of BS. Like, if they're going to do that, they'll save it for the conference title game if there ever comes to that. We know it's not going to happen for this year. But to me, I should not be giving this team any confidence or bulletin board material to beat us. Wearing cocky shirts and sweaters that says beat Dallas. I mean, come on now. If you're a fan, that's one thing. You want to wear that, you have every right to. But there's no reason for the head coach or any of the coaches to just feed into this nonsense of, you know, this is such, I mean, it's an important game, but come on, it's a division game, but come on. Let's be focused. Let's focus. If we have something to prove, let's be focused on the game plan and everything else. Not only weren't they focused fully, the game plan was terrible. Like I said, 3 runs the entire damn game. I've never remember seeing that. Even in the Andy Reid era, a pass-happy offense, he was. He never ran the ball less than 10 times a game. So, to me, like I said, and the sad thing is, you know the schedule was tough. You've now lost 2. And the next 4 games, obviously the next 2 home games, you're playing Brady and the Rocket. Good luck with that. And then the next 2 road games are teams that don't have a loss yet. So, yeah, it could be a 1-5 or even a 1-6 start before they actually wake up and actually know what kind of team they are. And that's why a 7-10 record that I predicted in my Facebook thing is more realistic than your bet in that they would win this division. Unfortunately, Dallas has already pretty much put that stamp on this division after 3 weeks because there's not as much flaws as we have. They're going to have a lot of injuries, or Dak's going to have to go down with an injury again for it to be realistic that we're going to be playing a home playoff game after January 9th.
Well, yeah, the game plan for this game was ridiculous. So, I mean, again, there's not a whole lot you can say aside from just complaining, but it was just awful, man. Everything about it, like you said, they ran the ball 3 times. You know, it's inexcusable. But we'll see going forward. I mean, the Cowboys, you can say what you want, but, you know, they're not that good a team, and they're definitely not that much better than the Eagles. And we'll see how it goes. They have another matchup yet. That one will be in Philly. It'll be a completely different game, so we'll see. But like I said, man, you know, these next couple of games are going to be key for Jalen Hurts because just remember the trade deadline is November 2nd, and if Hurts keeps playing poorly these next few weeks, don't be surprised if the Eagles start turning up in Deshaun Watson rumors again, because they obviously, coming into the season, weren't 100% sold on Hurts as their future, and with a guy like Deshaun Watson out there, if they're not sold on Hurts by mid-season, by really after 6 games, I should say, they're really going to put the full court press on Houston to try to bring Watson in here.
And the sad thing is, you have these already two first-round picks. Like I said, unfortunately, even though I've heard rumors that Deshaun doesn't want to come to Philly, allegedly, he understands the value situation, and the Houston Texans kind of see the value that the Eagles have. Is it worth trading away next year's draft to get Deshaun Watson here if it has to turn out? And plus, even if you do bring in Deshaun Watson, if you trade for him, you can't start him right away anyway because of the fact that the NFL is still monitoring his legal situation. And they're still going to have to come up with some kind of a deal where he's going to have to serve some suspension time, potentially 4 games, maybe 6 games, depending on the situation. So even if you bring in Deshaun Watson in a trade, that doesn't mean you're going to start him this probably even any time this season, because you're going to have to put him on the exempt list, or he's going to have to serve a suspension of at minimum 3 or 4 games. So, like I said, to me, I don't even want to think about the Watson rumors again. Like I said, I understand Jalen Hurts. There's a lot of questions. And yes, there is a lot of questions, because remember, this is the same guy that once was benched in a national championship game at Alabama for Tua. And we already know how we think of Tua, what kind of quarterback we think he's going to be. So to me, he's an even lesser situation than Tua is. But I still want to believe in him, and I'm not going to give up on him this quickly. Like I said, we've had terrible Eagles quarterbacks over the years. Bobby Hoeing comes to mind, you know, or one of the Detmer brothers. I mean, he can't be in that league yet. So, like I said, we're gonna be patient. And like I said, I mean, he's capable of having good games. You know, he's had 4 300-yard passing games. He had one on quietly on Monday, 326 yards. We obviously know he has legs. He can run the ball, which is something that Gardner Minshew and Joe Flacco can't do. They can't move for shit. So, like I said, I can't give up on Hurts right now. I just can't right now. But, yes, he does need to pick up his game. He still throws for 50, only completes 56% of his passes, and that's not going to cut it when the NFL average is about around 60 or 61. So, like I said, you know, there's a lot, you know, he's got to get better, but they obviously have to have a better plan. They have to run the ball. Boobie Miles is a great running back. I think he can has the tools to be a top 5 back in this league. But the fact is, he's been so underutilized in his career, it's getting to the point where why you even play him if you're not gonna use him. So to me, Sirianni has a lot to work on. And like I said, you're gonna play the Chiefs this weekend. Good news is their defense is not playing well. Bad news is you have to deal with Patrick Mahomes and a hell of an offense, one of the best in football. And obviously, Jonathan Gannon realizes that too, because he was very much humbled, going from 6 points given up against the Falcons to 34 against the Cowboys, because one of those scores were a pick 6. So, yeah, it's gonna be tough sledding here. I think Gannon is a decent defensive coordinator, but he's new at this too, leading the defense. So, like I said, It's a learning process this year. It's going to be a learning process, and there's going to be some rough sledding. But like I said, if they can get you know, keep their eyes and their ears and everything right, it can get better. But unfortunately, injuries are still piling up, and penalties once again. 13 penalties, 35 altogether. That's 9 more than the next team in the league, or at least 7 more. It's got to stop. You know, you can't be winning games and think you're going to win games or a disciplined team if you're having an average of 4 false starts and 4 holding penalties a game with 2 personal fouls. That's their average right now. So to me, like I said, there's a lot of issues that they need to clean up. They're fixable, but if they don't know how to fix them, it's going to be a long season. And Monday night's game gives you that bad indication.
Yeah, well, with the Chiefs game coming up, like I said, nobody expects them to win, so they don't have to. They don't have to win the game, but they need to. They need to be competitive, and Hurts needs to rebound here and have a good game. I mean, if they get blown out again and Hurts plays horribly, he's running out of
excuses
with the fan base, especially. But we already know coming into the season, like I said, the organization was already looking into Deshaun Watson. They clearly didn't have 100% faith that Hurts was the guy going forward. So, you know, he's going to have to. He's had one good game. You could make a case that he had an okay game, like an okay first half, I should say, against the 49ers. The second half, he was bad, and he's had a horrible game. So, you know, you can't see if he's fighting for his career as a legitimate starting quarterback in this league. He can't start off the season with three bad games out of four. You know, it's just not going to be good. So that's got to be the focus. Obviously, they have other issues, like you said. The penalties are awful. Gannon had a bad game coaching too this week, but. You know, he's also had two great jobs coaching wise in terms of with the defense shutting down both the Niners for the most part and the Falcons for what that's worth. But still, he's obviously going to have his hands full, as will the whole defense this week. But again, the Chiefs are going to put up points. It doesn't matter who they're playing. So we already know they're going to put up points, even if they put up 35, 40. No one's going to be like, oh, Gannon sucks, you know, because they do it against everybody. So, you know, that's just how it is with the Chiefs and their offense. But the Eagles need to score 30 this week, and that's just how it's got to be, man. If they can't break 30 against the Chiefs and their last-place defense, then there's some potential issues here.
Well, like I said, it's a learning process. It may not just be issues, it's just a learning process. But, like I said, unfortunately, we lost Saamalu for the season. He broke his foot in four places and had surgery on Tuesday. So another member of the O-line is gone. I don't think Dillard had as bad game as we all thought, but he didn't help his cause either. You know, Micah Parsons won that battle most of the game. So, like I said, I mean, just looking at everybody around them, I mean, the only good news is that Rodney McLeod is coming back to practice, and there's a very good chance he might play on Sunday, and that should help the secondary a little bit. But like I said, going against that offense, one of the best in football, when you think about guys like Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, you know, home run hitters. You know, it's going to be tough to – it's a tough matchup for Gannon. It might be probably the toughest offensive matchup he's going to have all season. So, like I said, a lot of work to do, and, you know, we'll see what happens there with them. So, but looking at the rest of the league here as we go into it – or you have more –
Yeah, real quick.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, real quick before we go off the Eagles, you mentioned Dillard. I mean, he was actually pretty decent, man. Believe it or not, he was the second highest graded offensive player on this team on Pro Football Focus. He had a 77.4 grade for the game, which is good. He was also the third highest graded player overall, for the Eagles this week. So, you know, he was the least of the issues. He was our biggest question mark coming in, but at least he showed that he can play in the NFL. You know, so maybe there's some hope there with him, or maybe if he ends up having to play again this week and has another decent game, maybe there's some trade value there before the trade deadline.
Yeah, well, like I said, we don't know how long Mariota's going to be out, so I don't think, you know, he still has a value, even though, yeah, he's not that great, but he does have value. But at the end of the day, I don't think the Eagles are going to be in the position to move him, you know, this year, at least before the offseason. So I would sit there and say, you know, let's just see. He's the backup. he's going to be for this season, and let's see what happens. But like I said, I mean, it was a tough night for the Eagles. It was a solid night for the Cowboys, unfortunately. But as we look around the league, I mean, the worst offensive game of the week, or maybe the year, was obviously the Chicago Bears. They started Justin Fields, and the Browns fed on them all day and every day. 47 yards total offense. Like, it's unbelievable. 47 total yards offense. I've never, you know, how many teams actually have offensive plays that go further than that in one play? He had 47 all day. I mean, that was terrible. And like I said, looking around, the Rams are rolling. Carolina, who's our next opponent after the Chiefs, they're rolling at this point. They have the Cowboys on Sunday, so that would be interesting to see what's going to happen with them. But, you know, like I said, you know, the Sunday night game, you know, what bugged me about the Sunday night game was, as good as Green Bay and the 49ers, it was a decent enough game, but it was basically dominated by Aaron Rodgers, and he was still Aaron Rodgers as we know him. I still don't get how Jimmy Garoppolo has this kind of how they can win for this guy. I don't see nothing special in Garoppolo. We played him last week and he didn't do anything significant. So, I mean, to me, when you think of elite quarterbacks, they have to have special abilities and stuff. Isn't Jimmy Garoppolo the biggest fraudulent alleged elite quarterback in this league? Because I said on my Monday look back, he's the best coach quarterback in football. I said that. Am I right about that, or is there something I need to know about Garoppolo that to me doesn't make any sense?
Yeah, no. I mean, Garoppolo will never be an elite quarterback. He's just an average quarterback. He's a decent player, but you know, he's more so just a placeholder at this point. He's clearly never going to be Brady or something like that. You know, he's never going to be a franchise quarterback. Even never going to be a top 10 quarterback. So, you know, he's just a guy. But you could do a lot worse as your starting quarterback. At the same time, you obviously he's not the future. And at some point this year, he's probably going to end up on the bench for Trey Lance, especially if that offense stalls out and, you know, he just keeps looking mediocre. He's going to end up on the bench most likely, but it's just a matter of time.
Yeah. Now, there are three teams, like I said, if you're looking at last year and the postseason, obviously the same 14 teams that made the postseason last year will definitely not make the postseason this year. And three of them right now are in last place. And one is very shockingly because we've just been talking about them. One is obviously the Pittsburgh Steelers, who once again played a lousy game against the Bengals and pretty much solidified that they might be the worst team in their division. Because if you're going to lose a home game this early against that team, there's something ain't right. We already talked about Kansas City and their struggles on defense, and unfortunately it robbed them of a victory on Sunday. It was another terrible defensive effort that, you know, now we as Eagles fans, we're going to be holding on to our hats because they're going to be playing pretty pissed off. When was the last time Mahomes ever had a two-game losing streak? And then shockingly, the Seattle Seahawks lost to the guy you call a loser, who actually in the last 8 games has 32 touchdowns and only 3 interceptions. So he might be a loser to you, but trust me, Justin Fields was like the big ass loser on Sunday. He couldn't even get himself out of a paper bag. So those are three teams that obviously were division winners and obviously Super Bowl contenders. We know Kansas City obviously is one of them. Which one of these three will recover, and which one of these three are in big trouble out of the three?
Well, I would say the team that's in the most trouble is the Steelers. They're just not looking good. Roethlisberger's old. So, I mean, they're in the most trouble. The Chiefs, I wouldn't say they're in trouble. They're off to a poor start. Their defense is not good. But with Patrick Mahomes, you know, they can turn that around. One thing with them, though, is teams are adjusting to that, to their offense, and the fact that they really only have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce as their only real weapons. They just brought in Josh Gordon, but, I mean, come on. So, you know, basically the defenses now are just, they're pretty much focusing on taking Tyreek Hill and the big play out of the game, and, you know, they're giving it up underneath to Travis Kelce, but, you know, they're just not letting Mahomes and that offense beat them over the top as much as they have in the past. And then the Seahawks, they're not looking good right now, but, you know, their defense, well, not this week anyway, but their defense has been a lot better this year than it was last year, and they still have Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, so they'll be able to put up points. So they can turn it around. The problem is they're in a really tough division, so, you know, that's just starting off in a hole is not helping them.
Well, like I said, I think the Chiefs will bounce back. I mean, obviously, as long as Mahomes is out there and healthy and moving around, they're going to be all right. But there is a little bit concern. I am concerned about the offensive line. It's been repaired. Obviously, it's a whole new line, but there seems like there's a little bit of an issue there. The Steelers are in the same position the Eagles are in. They need to rebuild. I don't know why Roethlisberger would want to come back for one more year. I mean, they got lucky against the Bills. The Bills slept on the Steelers in that game. But there's no way that they've looked good the last 2 weeks. Losing to lesser teams at home the last 2 weeks is not a good look. And my prediction of them going under 500 for the first time in the Tomlin era looks very, very realistic the way that it is right now. And then Seattle, I mean, you know, like I said, I've been kind of saying that their defense isn't that good anymore, obviously. And while Russell Wilson's still a decent quarterback, and we know that he's going to get the job done and stuff, it doesn't look good that you lose to the Vikings the way you did on Sunday. I didn't watch any of that game, but I read some of the things, and even though it was a quiet game nobody really paid attention to, you know, you're playing in one of the tougher divisions yourself when you think about the other three teams. And like I said, it's going to be, you know, if you don't win more than two, and there's a possibility the Seahawks may not even win more than two division games this year, and that could be, and that won't be good enough to even make the playoffs, let alone to contend for a division title. So, like I said, I'm not as concerned for the Steelers because I think they're going to be kind of lame, but I am concerned about Seattle. I think that there's some issues there that they need to address before if they're going to be playing deep into January. But I think the Chiefs will bounce back. They'll obviously bounce back on Sunday. We know that, so we'll see. But on the opposite side, there are four of the five unbeatens in the NFL still. There's five. We all know the Rams are legit. We know that. There are some of the others are kind of a pleasant surprise. Arizona is 3-0. And, you know, like I said, that they've had some decent games. You know, they struggled a little bit against Jacksonville, but they won. And then, obviously, your Raiders are doing shockingly. They've lucked into two victories out of three. They're 3-0, and everybody considers them legit. Carolina is 3-0, and they're the only team in the NFL that hasn't even trailed in a game, let alone lose. And then there's the Denver Broncos. Maybe the most fraudulent 3-0 team. Like, I remember last year you were saying that how the Bears were the fraudulent. How about this? Their opponents, 0-9 in their games this year. 0-9. So, really, are we supposed to take Denver seriously as a contender? I don't know. But what do you think? Who do you think is the big surprise, and who do you think is a fraudulent out of those four 3-0 teams so far?
I wouldn't break the Broncos as fraudulent. I mean, they're not contenders, but they're also not a bad team. Like I said before, man, if they had a legit quarterback in terms of elite type quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, when the rumors were going around, they would have been my pick for the Super Bowl. So, I mean, they clearly have a good team, and Teddy Bridgewater's playing well. Obviously, he's gone up against garbage, but still, I mean, they got a good enough team to make to be a playoff team. They're just not Super Bowl contenders. I still say the Raiders are frauds. I mean, they're playing well, but I think they're frauds. And, oh, by the way, they did win the game, but my lock of the week was the Dolphins. That spread was 3.5 points. So, you know, Dolphins lost by 3, so that's a victory for me in terms of against the spread. So I'm at 2-1 on the year now for my lock of the week. So, but yeah, I think the Raiders are frauds. Carolina is not that good, and they're going to come back down to earth soon, especially with McCaffrey injured. I do like Chuba Hubbard, especially little fantasy advice for you, which isn't anything novel because everybody's looking to pick him up. But if you can get Hubbard, pick him up. I was able to get him in one of my leagues, one of my two, and I'm actually trying to work a trade him to the McCaffrey owner and try to get some long-term help because my team already is sitting at 2-1 in that league, but my team's blown away the league in terms of points scored. I've finished these first three games. I finished with the high score two games and the second highest score in one, so, you know, I'm trying to work out long-term. But, yeah, I would say in terms of the 3-0 teams that could be frauds, I would say the biggest frauds to me are the Raiders. I just think Denver's a better team, and even though they haven't played anybody, I think that defense is really good. And like I said, I think they'd be Super Bowl contenders if they had a top-notch quarterback. So,
well, looking at these four, and you didn't mention Arizona, but you probably already know what they are. I mean, to me, Denver, I have to see more. You know, like I said, you haven't played anybody yet. When you play somebody that's 0-9, that hasn't even won in 9 combined games. The Raiders got lucky. They've won two of those three. They had to go to overtime to win. And really, I mean, to be Derek Carr and, like I said, Carr and Gruden, yeah, the relationship is well right now. But if it doesn't result in postseason, if this 3-0 start once again falls apart, and they don't meet the postseason, this marriage is not going to continue in the 2022. So, like I said, it's good for now as long as they're finding ways to win. Because once the schedule gets tougher enough where they can't keep up with really competitive and contending teams, then whatever. So I do agree with you on the Raiders. Well, Carolina, I mean, yeah. You know, without Christian McCaffrey, that's going to be tough offensively, you know, and what they do. Obviously, but again, you know, Matt Rhule, most of his coaching, his time, he hasn't had Christian McCaffrey at all. So he's used to game plan without him. And even though, yeah, they're not as good, obviously, offensively without him, I still look at it like this. You know, Sam Darnold is a decent quarterback, and as much as you may not like to hear, but like I said, if he can keep this up. But like I said, they do have a tough test on Sunday going to Dallas. And that will not be an easy matchup. So we'll see what happens with them. So, you know, like I said, none of these teams are going to last that long. I can't really, you know, outside of L.A., I can't see any of these other four teams going to winning more than continuing their winning streak. So, you know, whatever. But anyway, we're going to move around with some things that we normally do at near the end of the program. We're going to go to our fantasy questions. So like I said, I'll look into these fantasy questions here. But, you know, like I said, I mean, all right. The first one, there's three of them. The first one is, will Tom Brady have 3 or more touchdowns against the Patriots Sunday night?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Tom Brady's he's off to a huge start this year, and that's not gonna change this week. I mean, he didn't have the greatest game last week in terms of touchdowns. only threw one against the Rams, but he also threw for 400 yards. So, you know, he's got the weapons. He's motivated against his old team, against Bill Belichick. He wants to show him up. So I think he's going to throw for bare minimum 350 yards and four touchdowns.
All right. Second question is Derrick Henry. 20 or more fantasy points.
Oh, yeah, he's going to have a huge game this week, man. It's possible that the Titans are going to be without both their starting receivers in A.J. Brown and Julio, and they're going up against the Jets. Derrick Henry's been a beast. Depending on your scoring, if you're in a points-per-reception league, Henry, so far this year, has 12 receptions, which he has in top 20 in his career in a season. So they're using him in the passing game as well. He's on pace right now for over 500 touches for the season, which is not going to – they're not going to be able to keep up that pace. But he's easily going to have, I'm going to say, at least 120 yards and two touchdowns.
All right. Now the last one I'm trying to remember, but this is easy. Who do you sit and who do you start? Who's the one you need to start and who do you need and who needs to sit?
In terms of what, specific players or?
Yeah, like just randomly. I mean, who you think should start and who you think should sit for this matchups.
One player, like I just said, for Carolina, I'm starting Chuba Hubbard, especially if you're a Christian McCaffrey owner. Another player to put again in your starting lineups, if possible, or if depending on how the injury situation plays out. But Alexander Mattison had a 100-yard game last week. He's going up against a tough defense in Cleveland, but if Dalvin Cook is out, he's going to be the man again. I'd get him in my starting lineup. Sit all Bears players. I shouldn't say sit all Bears players. I would consider starting David Montgomery against the Lions. That might be it, though, you know. Allen Robinson, he's been really bad this year so far. Obviously, it's more so from the quarterback play, but that quarterback position isn't going to be changing for him for a while. So I definitely sit Allen Robinson. I would start David Montgomery if, depending on your team and your league size. I would start Jalen Hurts this week too. The Chiefs, like we've already said, they have the worst defense in the NFL, and even when Jalen Hurts has a bad game, he puts up good fantasy numbers. So he'll still get you those fantasy points, even if he doesn't have a good actual real game. So I pretty much say Jalen Hurts is a weekly starter at this point.
All right.
And going around that.
All right. Like I said, now we normally do this at the end too, but we're gonna do this early. Your surprise and your disappointments of week three.
Okay, I'll go for surprise. I'll go a good surprise. I would say in terms of teams that actually surprised me in a positive way, you know what? I'll give it up to your Vikings and your boy Kirk Cousins. They had a good game. You know, I wasn't expecting them to be in there with the Seahawks. I thought the Seahawks would not blow them out, but would be able to take them down, especially with Dalvin Cook out. And like I said, Madison went for 100 yards. Justin Jefferson had 100 yards. Cousins threw for three touchdowns. So, they had a really good game. And that defense of the Vikings, which isn't very good, you know, they held Russell Wilson in that offense to 17. So they're my surprise of the week and my disappointment of the week. I'm gonna give it to your boys, man, the Ravens. we didn't talk about them, but the fact that they needed to hit a 66-yard field goal to sneak by the Lions, and this is supposed to be a playoff team, the Ravens. I mean, come on, man, that's pathetic.
Well, they did make NFL history, but that was the jaw of the thrill of victory from the hands of defeat right there. I'll tell you that. Well, like I said, my surprise of the week, obviously my disappointment, I'll start with that, and that would be the Colts. Again, you know, they're 0-3 and Carson Wentz still looks pretty bad, and you know, like I said, like Hurts, how long will he be the guy there? It's not like Frank Reich has never had to deal with a change in quarterbacks, because that's been the case for him his entire Colts coaching career, having different quarterbacks. So, yeah, that's my surprise. That's my disappointment. And obviously my surprise of the week so far, you know, like I said, I mean, you know, like I said, my surprise is obviously the Saints beating the Patriots, basically. I didn't see that coming, but anyway, obviously we still have time left, and normally we would not do something like this, but because this Sunday we're going to see a matchup we would never, ever, ever thought we would see, but it's going to happen. Brady versus Belichick. And obviously the history of them is unbelievable. Over 200 victories, 6 Super Bowl championships, 1 million division titles. So many accolades, and unbelievable that they will be unanimous selections to Canton when it comes to when their days and their time comes, whenever that is. But you would think that this relationship would continue, and maybe it should if you look at reality. But unfortunately, before the pandemic and before the beginning of this decade, things have changed. Brady left. He's now in Tampa Bay, and the winning continues. He goes there, and in year one, wins it all again. And now a 7-time Super Bowl champion, where Belichick is spinning his wheels and has to start from square one again to build a Super Bowl dynasty, obviously with a new head, with a new quarterback in Mac Jones. And this Sunday night, he gets to see Brady, and Brady goes back to the place that they built, Gillette Stadium, and that tough New England crowd. And obviously, the history and the legacy is unbelievable. But we always wanted to ask the question, what the hell went wrong? Now, we've obviously talked about it in previous shows back in the day, but for people who wants to get up to speed, what do you think is the reason why the Brady Belichick dynasty ended?
Well, it was obvious that Brady just wanted to move on, man. You know, he didn't seem to be real happy with playing under Belichick anymore. And I think Belichick was, his ego might have got the best of him, man. And he's in rough shape right now. You know, Mac Jones is not looking good so far this year, which actually none of the rookie quarterbacks so far are looking good, but they're also rookies. You know, it's rare that you're going to have a guy just come out and dominate the league, even though it's happened in recent seasons. But nonetheless, you look at what happened, like you said, last year with Brady winning the Super Bowl. And now this last offseason, the Patriots just went out and spent a ton of money. Clearly that affected Belichick, and, you know, he's trying to get his own, his name in the record books as winning a Super Bowl without Brady, just like Brady has now won at least one Super Bowl without Belichick. And, you know, he may end up winning a second one this year for all we know. But the Patriots so far without Brady have not looked good. You know, they didn't play well last year, missed the playoffs. They're off to a poor start this year. And, yeah, even with all that money they spent, they're not looking too hot. So we'll see. But as in the short term, Brady's won the war between him and Belichick.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, the story is really interesting because we've said this many times on this program over the years, and obviously even when they were still together, who is the brains to that great to the greatest dynasty, maybe in all of sports, obviously in NFL history, but in all of sports. And it's hard to really look at Belichick as the guy, because, you know, before he's been a head coach in this league for many years. He was known as, you know, Parcells' little bitch, because he did everything Parcells probably did and more, besides his Cleveland Browns stint in the early 90s. But like I said, obviously, you know, even you look at his rookie year in 2000, the Patriots, it was Bledsoe, and the team still was very bad, wasn't good. But then you obviously bring in Brady, he starts, and they become this great team, you know, and Brady becomes the all-time greatest quarterback ever, and the most unlikely greatest quarterback ever. And it seemed like it was so easy. It seemed so easy. Like, every year you knew the Patriots were going to win their division. You knew they were going to be in the AFC Championship game. And almost every other year, you kind of knew they were also going to be playing in the Super Bowl. And most of those times, they would win it. Obviously, as Eagles fans, we beat Brady and Belichick, and that Super Bowl victory will forever be in our hearts forever, because we beat the best, and that still will always remind. But it was that year that we won the Super Bowl against the Patriots is where the Brady and Belichick relationship fell apart, starting, because Belichick wanted Garoppolo to take over for Brady, whether he got rid of Brady himself or Brady would retire. But Brady's still playing, and he's still playing at an elite level. And he lost that argument, and he had to trade Garoppolo to San Francisco. Worked out for Garoppolo. He got to a Super Bowl himself, and has had a decent run there. Still is there. But obviously, you know, when Brady left, it kind of, even though it didn't seem from a distance anymore, it seemed like a shell shock to Belichick that somehow his meal ticket for 20 years would leave him, and he would have to look at this Patriots team a lot differently in the mirror. And we saw what happened last year with Cam Newton. It was not a very good year. Obviously, it was a COVID year. It was a pandemic year. But unfortunately, you see what the Patriots are. They're 6 wins less without Brady. They were 7-9, and unfortunately, they missed the playoffs, and they weren't really anything special. So now you bring in Mac Jones. You drafted Mac Jones, and so far, you know, it's too early to tell how good or how bad he's going to be. I don't think he's going to be bad. I think he's going to have a decent career. But the problem is this situation and where they're at. Belichick is in a rebuild that is never going to get to what it used to be. Like I said, unfortunately, Brady is Dale Earnhardt, and Belichick's Richard Childress, and I told you that before. And if you look at Brady and Earnhardt's careers, they're eerily similar. He won 6 championships with Childress. He won by himself with somebody else. Only difference is he won a championship before his dynasty with Childress, where Brady did his dynasty with Belichick and then went and went somewhere else and won with somebody else. And now, here they are on Sunday night going against each other in front of the family, in front of everybody that's cheered for him for the last 2 decades. Like I said, it is going to be the most unbelievable game. I'll even admit I will bet on it. And obviously, it's going to be something that we've never seen coming, and we'll probably never see again, because this is not going to happen any other time. I don't see Belichick and Brady playing each other anymore after this. This is going to be the one and only matchup of these legends going against each other. So we better damn sure be lucky and be proud of what they have accomplished, because we will never, ever in this league see a dominance like Brady and Belichick ever again. That's all I can say. So, that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, well, obviously, it's the greatest run in sports history with a player and head coach together. And you're right, it could be the only time these two ever meet, because obviously Brady's getting to the end of the line, but at the same time, you never know. You never know. I mean, for all we know, maybe Brady ends up going to another team in the off season, and these two teams just happen to meet again next year, for all we know. Or him, I should say. These two, Brady and Belichick, happen to meet again. But you never know. But as it stands right now, it doesn't seem like Brady's going anywhere. Seems like he likes Tampa. Tampa wants to keep him for as long as he wants to play. And if that's the case, these two teams aren't going to meet for 4 years. So
you make that. Well, like I said, I mean, Arians and Brady are never going to have that kind of relationship. I mean, they obviously have a little bit of differences, even though they're both offensive guys. But like I said, it's just, even though Brady and Belichick weren't boys, they didn't have dinner together, they didn't have drinks together with their wives and girlfriends or whatever, kids or whatever, they did have a courtship. It was like Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson in Chicago Bulls. You know, it was like that. They had the one thing in common. They were better than anybody else at what they did. And there was nothing their leagues could do about it. But unfortunately, good things come to an end. Now, in the case of Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson, they just went their separate ways because the dynasty had to end because of situation. But here, Belichick was still hoping that Brady would still be here for many more years into this new decade. And obviously continue the winning success. And it might have still happened if Brady never left. But unfortunately, like I said, it's over. It's done. And both have moved on. We'll see if Belichick can actually win a championship by himself without him. Brady's already proven that. And like I said, we will see all of what kind of matchup. Unfortunately, on paper, it's not going to be a really good matchup. But the hype over this of regular season has been jumping for joy since the schedule came out this spring.
Yeah, man, it is pretty much the most looked forward to game of the season by most people.
Yes, and we will obviously talk more about this on Sunday. But obviously, we got into the end of this program, and we all know what the last thing we will talk about. Unfortunately, it's another lame-ass Thursday night game. This is actually the last Thursday night game, just strictly for NFL Network situations and your local affiliates in the Cincinnati and Jacksonville area. For Jacksonville, the Trevor Lawrence, Urban Meyer era is not off to a good start at all. Still searching for a win. Not doing very well. Obviously, you know, it's still a learning process for the number one overall guy against last year's number one overall guy in Joe Burrow. And the Bengals are off to a solid start. They're 2-1. And coming off probably the biggest win of his young career, and obviously of the coach Zach Taylor's career, beating the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh by double digits. Obviously, this is going to be interesting to see if this is even a matchup, let alone a thought. But, like I said, go ahead with this matchup on Thursday night tomorrow.
Yeah, well, it's like you said, it's a lame game. It's barely even, if it wasn't Thursday night, we wouldn't even bother looking into it, let's be honest. But it's Thursday, so the Jaguars are awful. They're one of the worst in the league. The Bengals have come out hot. They're looking good. They just beat the Steelers. It's questionable if T. Higgins will play. He didn't play last week, and they didn't need him. Ja'Marr Chase has been awesome in these first three games. You know, he's put to rest all those questions about his drops in the preseason. And unfortunately, you know, well, fortunately for them, but unfortunately Devontae Smith hasn't looked as good, but you know, hopefully he can come around too. But yeah, Ja'Marr Chase is looking every bit as good or better than Justin Jefferson did last year, so look for him to have another big game against this garbage team. And hopefully after this week, Thursday night games pick up, which it seems like they will. Because next week is, I think it's the Rams and the Seahawks. So, you know, that'll be a game at least worth looking into. And then after that, we got obviously got the Eagles and Bucks playing. So at least we got some games to look at coming up. But this one's a garbage game. So the Bengals are going to win this one easy. It'll be a blowout. So yeah, Cincinnati wins, and I'm going to say final score is going to be 38-13.
Yeah, like I said, it's not worth talking about. I mean, Cincinnati is improved a lot. You know, they're going to be a team that right now could be in the wild card chase at the rate they're going. I mean, like I said, Ja'Marr Chase looks like the best receiver so far out of this draft. And obviously, very talented Alabama. Alabama has been putting out great receivers here in the last few years. And obviously, what were you saying?
LSU.
Oh, LSU, my bad. Okay, I almost got it right. But at least SEC, same conference. But, yeah, but obviously, like I said, he had a monster game on Sunday, 2 touchdowns. And obviously, Burrow looks healthy again after his injury. And Zach Taylor, as the head coach, is starting to get his hands around this franchise. Where they go from here, we'll see. But obviously, Jacksonville is still learning. They're still, you know, Trevor Lawrence, like I said, it's not good days to be a Clemson fan because they're struggling without him. And obviously, it's still a learning game for Urban Meyer, who obviously is still trying to figure out if he's really a head coach for the pros or is he just a college coach. Right now, we know he's just a college coach for now. But it'll be interesting to see if it's going to be a mismatch or even a battle. But I doubt it will be much of a battle. I think that, you know, the Bengals are a better team, and it's going to show in this matchup. So, Cincinnati wins, and the final score, 34-16. Well, that's all we have on this, obviously, important episode to look back. And we will be back on Sunday to preview the rest of Week 4 as we now enter a new month, October. It's getting cooler out there. The weather's getting cooler. It's getting nicer. But, like I said, it's put up or shut up time for a lot of teams as far as their chances to make the postseason and start drifting their ways away from the rest of the contenders. So, like I said, big matchups on Sunday. Obviously, the big one, the Sunday night matchup, we will obviously get to as well. So, like I said, I hope you all enjoyed this episode. We covered a lot in less than an hour. And we will talk to y'all Sunday. High noon, people.
Yeah, bro.